Hello and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight, Black Voices. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at.
This is not a time to throw up our hands. This is a time to roll up our sleeves.
Kamala Harris concedes the presidential election as Donald Trump makes a decisive political comeback.
We're going to fix everything about our country. And
we have local reaction from Harris and Trump supporters, plus two area congressmen on what Trump's victory means for Capitol Hill and Illinois. And a post-election palate cleanser, we preview a new documentary celebrating 40 years of house music. First off tonight, Kamala Harris is encouraging a peaceful transfer of power as she concedes the race for president to Donald Trump. President-elect Trump's victory marks a sweeping political comeback for a candidate who refused to accept defeat 4 years ago, was convicted on felony charges, and survived two assassination attempts. The defeat leaves Democrats, though, to pick up the pieces and figure out a path forward for their party. Here with their reactions are Patrick Hanley, co-founder of Operation Swing State, Michelle Duster, author, historian, and great-granddaughter of Ida B. Wells, Santita Jackson, host of The Santita Jackson Show, and Devin Jones, Republican committeeman of the 18th Ward and chairman of the Southside Republicans. Welcome all of you to Chicago Tonight Black Voices, or welcome back. I know we've seen all of you before. what a day. First, briefly, I want to hear your reaction to the news. Devin Jones, I'm actually going to start with you.
Sure. I think it was a good night for Republicans across the country. Having the Senate, the House seemingly, and definitely with former President Trump winning, I look forward to some of the policies that they plan on introducing. I think a lot of people of a conservative mindset are looking forward to a more limited government, less taxes and different things like that. So it was a good night for Republicans, definitely.
Santita Jackson.
Well, it was not a good night for me. But, you know, I thought it was a good night for the country, a great night for the country. We mm-hmm. saw a woman take a negative and turn it into a positive. We took mm-hmm. her take a negative campaign position and make it a competitive one. And I saw her break through a glass ceiling. She chipped just a little bit more than Hillary Clinton did. I had the privilege of knowing, as you do, understanding these historical figures, knowing Shirley Chisholm. And she said while sexism was her greatest foe when she ran for president, she said, I thought that racism was going to be my greatest barrier, but it was sexism. Sexism is, as Nick Kristof of the New York Times said in 2008, while racism, we saw with Barack Obama, is wide, sexism is deeper. But we saw her, even with those hurdles, leap very, very high and go back to Howard University. She's my fellow Bison, just a year behind me. And encourage someone who in that audience might run for the Senate, House of Representatives, state seat, someone who needed to be encouraged, someone who might become president themselves. I saw her lift a nation today.
I think
it was her finest moment.
She she spoke directly to the young people in her audience mm-hmm. today. Michelle Duster, what was your reaction to?
Oh, well, I'm actually still trying to process everything. I mean, it was very disappointing to me. I guess I thought that we were farther along in our country when it came to looking at qualifications versus all the isms. And so, you know, to me, the candidates were starkly different. And I really believe if their professional backgrounds were reversed, mm-hmm. then there would have been no contest for Kamala Harris. So the fact that you have somebody with the background that Trump had against somebody with the background of Kamala Harris, and for him to come out the victor, I just think it says so much that I'm still trying to process.
Patrick Hanley, of course, you worked on, you know, getting volunteers to go to neighboring swing states. What did you hear, you know, as obviously the co-founder of the organization, and therefore you spent a lot of time in Michigan and Wisconsin. Sure. What did you hear from those voters?
So a lot of what we heard throughout the cycle was a deep distaste for President Trump, but a stronger perhaps frustration with pocketbook issues. I mean, when prices are up 20% in 4 years, that hits in a way that even topics that are so important to us, like democracy, just don't touch. And so we heard a lot of that on the doors. I think a lot of the conversations that our volunteers had did change minds, did bring out folks to vote for Kamala Harris and for Democrats, but it wasn't enough.
Based on what you heard from those voters, were you surprised with this outcome?
I was surprised by the magnitude of the outcome across the country. And I do take some small solace in looking at the counties that we knocked, and I see a smaller shift to the right in places like Southeast Michigan or Southwest Michigan, Southeast Wisconsin. But across the board, you see 3 to 6 point shift towards Donald Trump in places like New Jersey and New York, across the country, which tells us that this is a broader secular trend.
But you know what? I don't think it's shifting toward Donald Trump. Mm. I think they're shifting toward pocketbook issues and shifting toward a lot of pain. I think we cannot ever underestimate the impact of the housing crash in the early 2000s, 2008, watching Wall Street overtake Main Street. And Americans have been struggling with that. But I would have to say this, because I think of Ida B. Wells and how we continue to win every day. I saw my father after the Michigan primary in 1988, when it looked like for a moment that he would be the nominee. He had to find a way to turn around and make this a win. And that is what Ida B. Wells did. She said, you know, I leave with you like Mary McLeod Bethune. I will you hope. And you're going to keep on pushing, because these problems don't end with us. We just have to pick up the baton and continue to run our race.
You know, I also want to say that I think that there's a distrust of government for many people. And unfortunately, Vice President Harris represents government. You know what I'm saying? And so when you look at Chicago, and a lot of people are upset about a migrant crisis that they feel like they don't have any control over, you know, many people are displeased with their various mayors across the country, their various Democrat politicians. And unfortunately for her campaign, I think they took some of that on in some of the swing states and in various areas. So what you did see was pocketbook issues. Mm-hmm. You saw a distrust of government. And she has been in government for maybe almost as, definitely my entire adult life. I'm 38, right? Oh. So that, you know, I don't want people to get lost in, mm-hmm. if they like President Trump's personality or not. People looked at policies. People looked at the 4 years that he was president, and they made a choice based off of that.
You know, Republicans don't fall in love. You fall in line. So even if you don't love him, you say, look, he's the horse I'm going to ride on. And that's what I saw with Republicans. And I can appreciate that, although I disagree with it. It's a certain political discipline that you all do have. I'm a little bit more emotional about this, but I take this as a win. I'm very excited about all that she has done. I'm so proud of her.
And she delivered a concession speech this afternoon, mm-hmm. about 3 o'clock local time, or actually more like 3:30. Here's a listen.
At the same time, in our nation, we owe loyalty not to a president or a party, but to the Constitution of the United States. And loyalty to our conscience and to our God. My allegiance to all three is why I am here to say, while I concede this election, I do not concede the fight that fueled this campaign.
Michelle Duster, she only had about 100 days or so to campaign after President Joe Biden stepped out of the race. Do you think she could have had a better chance at reaching voters had this been done a lot sooner? Had there been maybe a different sort of Democratic primary or opportunity for Democrats to select who's going to run? And she'd be given more time to get to the office.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, Donald Trump has been in the public sphere for over a decade, and Kamala Harris was only, as vice president, she took more of a back seat as far as the public, knowledge of her. So she really did have a very short amount of time, especially compared to 10 plus years. That's just with the presidency, and then you add all of the other exposure of Donald Trump. So people have pretty much grown up with him.
Patrick, going into this race, you know, a lot of polls were telling us that it was virtually tied, a virtual dead heat. this was not a tie, not even close. This was a decisive victory for President Trump. Do you think Vice President Harris's reluctance to separate herself from Joe Biden, because I think we know that that moment on The View when she said that there was not much different, might have been a bit of a turning point for her. Do you think that that hurt her?
I want to echo what Santita and Michelle have said about how historic this race has been, how difficult the race has been for the vice president to define herself while also defining President Trump as a danger to democracy that he did. And I would just say, I do think it was an impossible campaign to run against headwinds that were truly historic, just given prices and given the mood of the electorate, given the issues that people were frustrated about that were addressed during the Biden administration, but certainly not solved. And it reflects a broader frustration that I think we've been dealing with for four or five presidential campaigns now, where folks are looking for serious change in the way that we do politics and government here in the United States.
And you know, he ran 4 years. She ran 4 months.
That's right.
And I can't help but think that she was a Douglas Hall, because of course she and I both went to Howard University, Frederick Douglass Hall, someone who really ushered us into a new America with President Lincoln. And the fact that she delivered that speech today, lifting us above politics, lifting us really out of our own pain today, I just really feel a sense of victory. And you have to continue to chip away.
Positivity, but I think your friend sitting to your left would say it is the Republicans who were the victors here because they also took control of the Senate. House is still in play. We're going to talk about that a little bit more coming up. We're out of time with this group. Thank you so much, Patrick Hanley, Michelle Duster, Santita Jackson, and Devin Jones. All right, up next, what members of Congress have to say about Trump's victory, what it means for Capitol Hill and the state.
Chicago Tonight, Black Voices, is made possible in part by the support of these donors.
President-elect Donald Trump ran his campaign by making promises like sweeping tax cuts, proposing higher tariffs, cutting climate regulations, and deporting undocumented immigrants. His election is just the crest, though, of an apparent red wave as Republicans take control of the Senate while the House remains undecided. Joining us now with more are Democratic Congressman Danny Davis and on Zoom, his colleague, Democratic Congressman Jonathan Jackson. Thanks to you both for joining us, Congressman Jackson. I'm just going on faith that you're not driving at the moment. So thank you so much.
I am not driving.
Of course not. All right. So first, I want to hear a little bit of what Trump had to say in his acceptance speech overnight. Here that is.
We're going to help our country heal. We have a country that needs help, and it needs help very badly. We're going to fix our borders. We're going to fix everything about our country. And we made history for a reason tonight, and the reason is going to be just that.
Congressman Davis, let's start with you, please. What do you think this election came down to? The campaign, the candidates, the issues, the voters?
I think a combination of all those things. As a matter of fact, I think there were people who were led to believe that things were different than what they are. As a matter of fact, I always say we've made lots of progress in this country. I don't deny it. But I also warn, let's not get to the basement and act like we're in the penthouse. I was surprised at the outcome. I was amazed. I was disappointed. But I'm prepared to take what is and work to keep moving, keep going. And so I don't expect nothing to be exactly as the president just said. I expect that he will continue his policies of promoting tax cuts. Yeah, for the wealthy 1%, those who have the most. So we're going to spend 4 years of struggle of fight, of interacting, and trying to keep from going too far back, although the voters have said what they said. Here's where we are.
Congressman Jackson, what do you think a Trump presidency will mean for the state of Illinois and Chicago?
Well, I tell you, words matter. And so I'm very concerned about the language that the President Trump has used into the going into the election. Vernum, poisoning the blood of our nation. Mrs. Harris is unintelligent. Lock up Mrs. Clinton, putting Mrs. Cheney in the crosshairs of gunfire. These are words towards violence towards women. And I hope we can move beyond that rhetoric. I'm embarrassed that we're even having to deal with it, but I have to hold him at his words. His words are ultimately is what he said he wants to deliver. And these words of threat and intimidation, I pray that they go away, because the president, as he speaks, someone else manifests those words. And that's extremely dangerous tone and tenor that we're facing in our country.
The black vote, the quote-unquote black vote, has been a major talking point this election season, especially among Democrats and Republicans, truthfully, but especially because there is a black and Indian woman at the top of the ticket. Particularly black men, though. An NBC poll from 10 states found that 92% of black women voted for Harris compared to 78% of black men, and the counterpoint to that is 20% of black men voted for former President Trump. Congressman Davis, to what do you attribute this racial and gender divide?
Well, I think some of it had to do with the machismo of President Trump, who convinced men that there was something different about them and about the way that his leadership would be compared to what Vice President Harris's leadership would be. And it means to me that we have a great deal of work to do, especially with African-American males. It was amazing to me that 20% would have voted for President Trump, knowing his policies, knowing his practices, knowing his comments, knowing what he had said. I couldn't imagine it.
It looks like for now the House will remain a Republican stronghold, but it is still a little bit early. Democrats need to flip 4 seats in order to gain control. Congressman Jackson, what concerns do you have about governing as a minority, but with Republicans, if Republicans should take control of both houses, because we know for now Republicans have shifted towards a majority in the Senate?
Well, I serve on foreign affairs and agriculture. In foreign affairs, we have to figure out whether or not we have a commitment to the Ukraine, whether or not we have a commitment to NATO, whether or not we have a commitment to Article 5 in our NATO Accord, all for one, one for all, stopping the aggression of Vladimir Putin, or if our word doesn't mean anything and we're unilaterally pulling out of it. That's a big question that President Trump should be asked. I wish he had done a second debate so there could have been more specific depth and content. And also think that you have to talk about the existential crisis in climate, as he talked about giving oil companies billions of dollars in tax breaks so that they can continue to pollute. That's a huge issue. Now it's February, it's November in Chicago, and we have like 70-degree weather, 60-degree weather. Clearly something has gone wrong in our environment, which I'm also in agriculture. I've started looking at these mallets and these other forms of sorghum that are heat-resistant strands of wheat. We're going to have to talk about how do we feed people going forward. There are cities like Las Vegas and Phoenix and Mexico City that already have water crises. Atlanta has a water crisis. There's no natural body of water. So what is a developmental path that we can sustain that's good for America is what's going to be top of my agenda and seeing from the president.
Congressman Davis, same question to you. You've been in Congress for a long time, and if the Republicans should gain control, as it is, they already have the White House, of course, in the Senate, and it's looking like they will likely have a majority in your chamber as well. What does governing in the minority look like for you all?
Well, I had hoped for new initiatives and increase in things like the child tax credits and all of these great things we were going to be able to do. I think now we're going to have to play more defense. We keep hearing about cutting this, cutting Social Security, cutting social welfare programs, reducing spending. Well, we're going to be playing a tremendous amount of defense instead of playing offense, and so trying to hold back the knives that President Trump and his colleagues have will be a big challenge.
Okay. Best of luck to you both in the challenges, and obviously when you head back to D.C., when all of it goes down, of course, when he's sworn in as our the next Congress, Congressman Jonathan Jackson and Congressman Danny Davis, thanks to you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we're back with more right after this. Chicago has long been known for nurturing diverse music genres and also, infamously, a place where one of them died, RIP disco. But another musical form known as house music rose from its ashes. To mark the 40th anniversary of its invention, a new Chicago Stories documentary is celebrating the innovative and catchy dance music that still inspires prominent artists today. It's called House Music, A Cultural Revolution. Take a look.
House music is more of a feeling than it is a sound.
That infectious feeling was created in Chicago's underground black gay clubs by DJs blending musical genres.
Disco is the mother of house. Gospel is the father of house. Funk and soul are the brothers and sisters of house. I mean, it's all mixed in there.
And joining us now is the documentary's producer, Barbara Allen, or BA, as we like to call you, around the station. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
So, Barbara, what is house music? How did it get its name?
House music comes from a club that was known as The Warehouse. And people wanted to get the music, and they would go to record stores saying, I want the music from The Warehouse. So they shortened the name to house music so it would be easier to find.
And how is the music distinctive? How do you know it's house music?
It's kind of the groove, you know. House music can be a lot of things. It's all in how the groove happens, because there's gospel in house, there's soul in house, there's hip-hop in house. Everything can become house music by the groove, by the way they put the groove together. So you get African music, you get all kinds of music that ends up in house, and a lot of old disco. So it's kind of an evolution of disco. Yeah, it's the evolution of disco into this whole other form.
Because it has that very noticeable sort of beat underneath,
yeah,
that makes most people want to dance,
yes,
right?
Yes, they call it four on the floor. It's like church, four on the floor, and it makes you want to get up and move. Even if you can't dance, you'll hit the beat at some point.
At some point, find it, or the beat will find you.
Yes.
So house music, as we mentioned, celebrating its 40th anniversary this year. What has given this music its longevity compared to other music forms like disco or go-go? Those other forms of music seem to have faded. Why is house music stuck around?
Well, I think those other forms of music have kind of melted into house music, too, because there's go-go in there, there's hip-hop in there, there's a lot of things in there. But house music is more than just the music. It's a community, and it's a feeling. And so the film talks a lot about the community and the people. They call them the congregation, who make up the people who love house music. And once you get that beat, it's kind of like chanting with your body, where you all get on the same groove as you would in a chant, but you do it with your body and with dancing.
It was surprising how many women were behind the turntables when house music was coming along.
Yeah.
Why did that surprise you?
It surprised me because I didn't know all the things they went through to be able to play the music. I thought they just played like everybody else. But they went through a lot of things just to get on the stage because people didn't accept women as DJs at that time, which is strange to us now, but they had to fight to actually play because guys thought women couldn't play music, couldn't blend two records together and mix, but...
What?
Yeah.
Women can do the same things.
Yes.
Backwards and in heels.
Better hand
sometimes.
And eye coordination.
All right. Well, if folks want to know, then they've got to watch the documentary to learn more about what those women went through. Barbara Allen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And you can watch Chicago Stories, House Music, A Cultural Revolution, this Friday night at 8 on WTTW. And be sure to check out WTTW.com/Chicago Stories for more in the documentary series. And we're back to wrap things up right after this. And that's our show for this Wednesday night. Before we go, a quick note of congratulations to members of the WTTW news staff. Producer Paul Kane won a Chicago Midwest Emmy Award this past weekend for health and medical coverage. His story was about next-generation bionic limbs being pioneered at the Shirley Ryan Ability Lab. And former producer Erica Gunderson, along with photographer-editor Damon Ranger, won an Emmy for arts and entertainment coverage for their story about the Galloping Ghost Arcade. You can check out both of those stories on our website. In all, WTTW received 8 awards, including recognition for host Jeffrey Bear and various honors for the Chicago Stories documentaries Angels Too Soon, Race to Reverse the River, and The Outrage of Danny Sotomayor, as well as the special Chicago Mysteries. Congrats to all. Really proud of you all. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. We'll unpack the swing of Latino support that helped fuel Donald Trump's reelection. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a personal injury law firm committed to giving back to the community through law and philanthropy.